Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
9-month-old Genevieve Meehan was safely dropped off at her nursery by her loving mummy on the 9th of May 2022. And yet just over 7 hours later, she was pronounced dead. In what was supposed to be the safest place in the world, she had been strapped face down to a beanbag for over an hour and 37 minutes while her cries of distress simply went ignored. This is a devastating, heartbreaking and entirely avoidable killing of Genevieve Meehan.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen.
Today's story is really, really sad. And for any of you who've got babies or young children, you will probably feel even more connected to this because when you are looking at your children, all you see is this naivety, this innocence, this beauty, this possibility. And that's exactly what Genevieve Meehan's parents were doing when they were looking at her. This big, beautiful-eyed girl who had everything to live for. She was literally at the very beginning of her life, and the fact it gets cut short in such a callous way is absolutely mind-blowing. Bear in mind, she's 9 months of age when she loses her life. She is just perfect to look at. And I appreciate every baby is just delicious to look at. They're absolutely gorgeous. But some babies are just blessed, and she is. She looks genuinely like she's out of some kind of magazine. She's like a doll. She's just so perfect. She's known to her family as Gigi. So even though she's called Genevieve, they call her Gigi for short. And she's the daughter of barrister John Meehan, a very successful barrister, and also his wife, solicitor Kate Wheeler. Genevieve had two sisters who loved her dearly. Now, what's also to be noted at this point is that we're talking about a child born into a privileged situation. Great parents, great postcode, great possibilities, great privilege. And even though every child deserves that, not every kid gets it, but she did. She was absolutely adored by her family, and she was going to have a life full of potential and possibilities because her parents had done so well. They were brilliant professionals, very educated people, and it doesn't take you more than a moment when you listen to some of the things that they spoke about in court to not understand how devoted they were to their family. She had an older sister who she was very, very close to, and Gigi is described as a child who just loved life. She loved to play the tambourine. She loved spending time with her big sister. She was described as just effortlessly kind, infectious, mischievous, everything that you want a baby to be, because at 9 months of age, they're just really coming into their own. They've started to travel along furniture on their feet a lot of the time, just about to start walking. They're making noises. They've become this whole perfect personality. And you're getting to see these tiny moments of who they're going to be, all wrapped up still in these gorgeous little bodies that are wandering around in that awkward and not quite linear fashion because they haven't got the cognitive abilities and the balance yet. They're in that amazing space where you're truly starting to get to know the person they're becoming. She had also been born prematurely, so she was born just as my first child was born at 35 weeks. But despite that difficult start, she was said to have absolutely thrived. And like I said, you take one look at the picture of her and you can just see that twinkle in her eyes, and those eyes, those beautiful eyes. Now, Gigi attended Tiny Toes Nursery in Cheadle-Hulme. Now, this is a really lovely area. It's an affluent area of Stockport, which is in Greater Manchester, although a lot of people I know who come from Cheadle-Hulme will say that they come from Cheshire because they think that sounds better. Whereas people like me, we just know we're from Manchester because we're a bit more common, shall we say. And I mean that in the most loving of ways to my fellow Mancunians. But nonetheless, it's an affluent area. It's a beautiful area. It's very leafy. A lot of people don't think about Greater Manchester as being a very leafy, green area, but there are lots of places, these pockets of perfect to some degree when it comes down to a little village environment, but in a much bigger city. Now, that nursery, Tiny Toes Nursery, was owned by Frank and Karen Pelly, and it had been a very successful nursery. It was a long-standing nursery with respect, so what it became was probably not how it started. And Genevieve, Gigi, had literally been attending the nursery for just a few weeks. Just let that sink in. A few weeks. Now, consider the fact that she's got parents who are obviously consummate professionals, understandably in the UK. It tends to be that if you have a baby, you go back to work usually between 9 and 12 months after the birth because you get a certain amount of pay. You're very fortunate in the UK to get maternity pay. And it gives you this breathing space where you can get to know your baby, spend time with your baby, and just really bond and go through those motions while not worrying too much about the finances. So I would imagine that's what her mother's done. So by the time that she's chosen and selected this nursery, she will be going through the tumultuous experience of having to say goodbye to her child to go to work. And that is really upsetting for a lot of us. Anyone who's had to leave a child for that first few weeks when you're just getting used to not being present with them 24/7, it is really challenging psychologically, emotionally, even socially, because everything slides and changes and you're back in the office, and that can all be quite overwhelming. And the one thing you're hoping is my baby's going to be happy, because you don't want to imagine that their experience in the world diminishes because you're not present all the time, and you trust your child with people that you think are going to do the best for them. And there is no doubt whatsoever that Genevieve's parents will have done their due diligence. They are legally trained. They are going to have looked at what the Ofsted is. They are going to have considered other options, and they'll have come to the conclusion that Tiny Toes Nursery is the right place for them. The very fact that we're talking about that child being dropped off in the care of this nursery and then that child being dead literally a few weeks later is absolutely harrowing. She was only enrolled in April, and yet on the 9th of May 2022, her life ends in the very place and space she's meant to be protected. Now, as she's dropped off on that fateful morning, this beautiful girl with what was described as striking emerald eyes, she had apparently at this point just taken her first steps. She was uttering her first words. So she's very developmentally advanced with respect. Most babies aren't uttering their first words at 9 months or taking their first steps at 9 months. So she...
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered. Like, precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches. But there aren't, right?
Right. Because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at carvana.com.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
She's thriving, in spite, like I said, of being born prematurely. She had that weekend been at home with her parents. Apparently she was enjoying cuddles. She was playing with her favourite toy, which was a tambourine. And she had a routine. And that routine is as familiar to them as parents as it was to so many parents in the UK and around the world. Her mum, Katie Meehan, basically drops her off. She has a quick word with staff, says that Genevieve's been a bit snotty. She obviously had a bit of a snuffle, but she was otherwise fine. And the final words that she said to that beautiful little girl on an ordinary morning that would become so extraordinarily devastating was "I love you, sweetie." I'm so glad that she managed to say those words, because sometimes when you're rushing and you're not thinking, even though you have those feelings and sentiments in your heart, you might not speak them. But the fact that her mother uttered those words to her beloved daughter, and they're the last words that she ever said to her, I know it won't bring her comfort, but at least it will resonate that she managed to make sure that those final sentiments were so potent and full of love. So Genevieve is dropped off around 9 a.m. and then at 3:12 p.m. that same day, she's found unresponsive in blue in her nursery. Now, just consider this. Unresponsive is one thing. That's terrifying enough. Blue speaks of neglect. If a child has actually got to a point where their pallor is turning blue because they've been starved of oxygen, shall we say, somebody has not been doing their job. Understandably, at this point, the police and paramedics were called because this is unresponsive baby. They arrive at 3:20 p.m. and at this point it's harrowing for all of them because they realise Genevieve just isn't breathing. They try to revive Gigi, but apparently her condition, even at this point, was irreversible. When they arrive at Stepping Hill Hospital, the medical staff there again, they're doing their best to save her, but she can't be revived. Now, Kate Ruffley, that's the woman who is in charge of the baby room at the time of Genevieve's death. She then says to the police that she didn't know what happened, that she'd been checking on Genevieve regularly, at least every 5 minutes. So the story that's being told to the emergency responders and indeed to the police themselves is, listen, I don't know what's happened. What we do know is we were doing our job. This little girl has been checked on literally every 5 minutes. So to the emergency responders, clearly something catastrophic has played out. But at that moment in time, they're not thinking that anyone is duly responsible for it. But like with any child death, there needs to be a full investigation. And one of the great things these days, although I understand there are negatives associated with CCTV too, but as far as I'm concerned, from a criminal perspective, and even from a care perspective, when you're considering people in old people's homes and hospitals, etc., if there is CCTV, it makes abuse a lot less possible because the person doing it is going to be captured. So even though some people find it an invasion of privacy, I think in certain conditions and environments, it's actually key. For example, if I had a child that was left with somebody that I trust, but I don't naturally know because they're in a position that I'm leaving my child with because, for example, they're a nursery worker, the idea that they're being filmed, that makes me breathe easy. Because at work, you should always be professional and you should be doing your job effectively. So there's no big deal that you're being filmed. I understand if it was in a private space, that would be a whole different conversation. But certainly the fact that CCTV is there, that they are being filmed, that is key. Because you can literally, bit by bit, go through all of the footage and figure out, could this have been avoided? Or indeed, are we just dealing with a harrowing, but realistically non-blameful death? Just a child who sadly passed away. So they get the CCTV and it is horrible. Genuinely, guys, it's absolutely awful. So they go through it piece by piece and they form the picture of exactly what played out. So on the day of the tragedy, Kate Ruffley, who again, as I said, is the one who's acting as the lead in the baby room, she's actually only one of two workers looking after 11 babies. Now, I have one baby. She's just turned 10 months old and she's Houdini. Literally, she's Houdini. The other day, and I have everything that you're meant to have in my home before somebody writes some kind of big forum post about what a terrible mother I am, because believe me, that stuff happens. But genuinely, I was dealing with getting some bits and pieces together for her lunch. She's not eating a lot. She's majorly breastfed, but nonetheless, you know, just getting used to finger food. And she managed to remove herself from my kitchen that is quite organized as far as having locks everywhere. And don't get me wrong, she only made it to the bottom of the stairs, which is very close to my kitchen. But nonetheless, if I hadn't have been looking after her in that moment, she would have scaled to the top. And by God's grace, she'd have still been okay. Babies are pretty amazing. But what I'm saying is, the idea of having 11 babies, that is something I can't even quantify in my mind. The amount of work that needs to be done with 11 babies to just tend to their basic needs, whether that's a nappy change, whether that's a feed, whether that's putting them down for a sleep, whether that's entertaining them, because believe me, babies, even very small babies, like to play. Two people looking after 11, that seems like a major breach of professional standards, without a doubt. And even though I'm not going to have a lot of sympathy with the person who is without doubt responsible for the death of his child in this video, I do have sympathy that that is an overwhelming situation to have to manage, if not an impossible situation to have to manage. And the mindset of that is going to be to reduce the stress level and to reduce you having to look around everywhere to manage that situation accordingly. Because babies move, and if you've got 11 of them, that can lead to accidents. So that's going to put workers in a particular mindset of how do we contain this environment? And that is important to note. Like I said, we're not reducing any culpability in this case whatsoever. The person responsible is going to get it, as they always get it, and rightly so, in these videos. Now, the CCTV, really worryingly, aside from the fact that this overwhelming scenario with too many babies that are requiring looking after, even if there's only two people present to do that. Now, aside from the CCTV, as I've said, showing some pretty damning evidence that they're not professionally in a scenario where the children are receiving what they need to receive because there's such a minimal staff presence there, what they also know is that the nursery worker, Kate Ruffley, starts to get really frustrated with Genevieve. So barely an hour after she's arrived, this is beginning. So it's not as if there has been a real prelude. She just seems to take a dislike. That's what the actual prosecution is suggesting, that she didn't connect with this baby. And it is not possible for me to be able to compute how that wouldn't be something that anybody could do. There is nothing about Genevieve that would make you struggle to connect with her. However, it could be that Genevieve represents something that Kate Ruffley doesn't like. It could be that Genevieve is beautiful, that Genevieve is loved, that Genevieve is being brought up in a family with privilege and opportunity and possibility. Maybe that's what's getting on her nerves about this child. Maybe she looks at Genevieve and thinks, well, maybe if my life had been the life that this child was going to be given, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now. These are all things psychologically that can create a bias. Not saying that's the case. I'm just saying that they identified that there seemed to be an issue with the way that she singled Genevieve out. And she can actually be heard on CCTV footage on the day that this beautiful little girl dies saying, if you keep yourself busy, you can't hear her crying. So she's acknowledging this child is very distressed. She's avoiding doing anything to alleviate that distress. And she's actually giving advice about how, if you want to ignore it, you just keep yourself busy so it doesn't interfere with your day. This is a baby that is meant to be tended to. If a baby is distressed, they have very few ways of communicating. They're not seven. They can't be like, excuse me, could you just come over here? I'm having a bit of a bad day and maybe I need a hug. They can't do any of that. The way they communicate is through crying. It's their survival mechanism. They're distressed. Tend to me. Don't ignore them. In fact, ignoring them is not good for attachment whatsoever. And as a nursery worker, your job is to help to foster secure attachment, particularly when this child has only been attending nursery for a few weeks. So bear in mind, of course, that's going to be distressing for the baby. It doesn't matter how amazing your parents are. It doesn't matter how loved you are. It doesn't matter what your possibilities will be. It doesn't matter how rich you are. None of that matters. What matters is, how do I feel? You're a baby. You are instinctually programmed to act in certain ways. Her programming has been, I have this loving family, they're with me all the time, and now all of a sudden, strange environment, strange smells, surrounded by other babies, with people she doesn't know. Of course, she's not going to be super happy. It'd be weird if she was. She's going to be struggling a little bit to adapt because she is typical and she is able to be noted that way by these reactions. It would be much stranger if I was telling you that she just settled in perfectly and she never looked back. That would not speak of a secure attachment to her parents. So anybody working in this environment should know that Genevieve is going to be having to adapt, and that will mean that maybe she's a bit more grisly, maybe she's a bit more needy, maybe she's a bit more cryy. And what do you give to a child like that? Compassion, attention, and care. And instead, she's being ignored. And it almost feels like there's a callousness in the way she's being treated as well. Now, shortly before 1:30 p.m. on that same day, the 9th of May, Kate Ruffley is now complaining to a colleague that the 9-month-old baby that she's caring for, so Genevieve in this case, had been awake for nearly 3 hours. Well, my child, like I said, is weeks older than that, and she's pretty much awake the whole day. So I don't get naps in the day. She just likes being alive and likes playing. It is not always the case that children have long sleeps in the day. But this is not something that Kate roughly is happy with. She feels that that baby being awake for nearly 3 hours is basically meaning that the child needs caring for. And this isn't something that's in line with what her order is. She clearly believes that children should sleep for long periods of time. And I guess that's because it's way easier for her when the children are asleep, because you don't have to do much. So she said that she'd actually rather at this point put her on the beanbag than, quote, waste a cot. I know that for any mum out there and any dad out there, you will have immediately felt yourself tighten around your chest and stomach because, yes, I said the word beanbag. You don't ever put babies of this age on beanbags, and there are lots of reasons why, but the whole presence of a flat surface is obviously airways are therefore open. A beanbag molds around you, therefore that in itself would not be considered appropriate, but it's going to get a lot worse than just placing this beautiful little girl on the beanbag. So they get prepared for the afternoon naps of the babies, and where Genevieve is concerned, this happens around 1:35 p.m. and what roughly does is she swaddles the 9-month-old so tight that she couldn't move. Now, there are lots of cultures where swaddling babies is completely contextual, and even in the UK, they will teach you how to swaddle so that a child feels totally safe. I'm not going to throw out swaddling as a terrible thing. It isn't, but that's because people who are doing it are usually swaddling for the best of intentions, the best of purposes, which is about making the child feeling secure. But that's not what's happening here. Bear in mind, there is something going on between Ruffly and Genevieve regarding personalities. There is something about Ruffly that has not taken to Genevieve, according to the prosecution at least, and certainly according to the actions I'm going to talk about right now. So aside from doing that, and we could leave it at that point, if she just placed her in a cot and made sure that she was checked on, that would be completely acceptable care. That's not what happens. She takes that gorgeous baby, now completely swaddled, can't move. She places her face down onto a beanbag. So she's face down, she can't move, and now she can't also breathe freely because she's literally swaddled tight, can't push herself over. And anybody who's had a baby or had interactions with babies, they're very good. Even from quite an early age, 3.5 to 4 months, you'll see them starting to push themselves over. And that's a way of surviving as well, because if you're struggling to breathe in one position, you can push yourself or move your head. You can't do that when your body is literally mummified. And Genevieve can literally be heard crying on many occasions. She's really struggling. Now, despite the fact that Ruffly knows that she's very upset and distressed, as opposed to going over and comforting her, as opposed to trying to engage with her to understand what she needs to do to help her, instead, she's literally seen pulling one of the blankets over Genevieve's head before walking away. The abandonment of professional decorum, of compassionate care, of child safeguarding speaks for itself in the sentence I've just spoken. Just to walk over to a distressed child, already finding it difficult because she can't move, her breathing is obstructed, and this worker to then put a blanket over Genevieve's head and to just walk away, she seals her fate in that moment. Now listen, for over an hour, Ruffly is captured ignoring Genevieve, even though she's getting more and more distressed. And CCTV footage actually showed that 1 hour and 37 minutes later, so just put yourself into that position, we're talking about a defenseless, helpless child. We're talking about a baby that cannot do anything for themselves because their arms and legs have been restrained, her face has been put into a beanbag, and she's been left at one point with a blanket over her head. But what they could hear was absolute distress in that child's voice. And yet they left her there for 1 hour, 37 minutes. I can't even imagine how I would feel if I had found myself in such a situation. Now, at this point, Kate roughly goes over and approaches Genevieve. Apparently she leant over, placed her right hand on the child's back for several seconds, and then she obviously realizes something's wrong. this baby isn't reacting how it's meant to react. Suddenly the seriousness of what's playing out hits her, and you see Ruffly crouched down, apparently on the CCTV, and she lifts the cover. Then she flips Genevieve over, and at that point, panic sets in. She jumps up and says, shit, she's not breathing. Apparently a colleague of her then says, what? And Ruffly repeated, she's not breathing. And then at that point, she runs out of the room, essentially. So at this point, Genevieve's unstrapped. She's then carried to a playmat, and her little body at the time was apparently wearing a blue T-shirt with the words, Marais is the best district in Paris. And it was obvious on CCTV that she was floppy, her head fell back, her legs dangled down, and four staff members apparently gathered around her. They were speaking to her, calling her name, trying to rouse her, but nothing was working. Nothing was working because she just had 1 hour 37 strapped face down to a beanbag, becoming more and more distressed. Can you imagine the stress going through her body, the cortisol? Can you imagine a little impact on her heart? This is a baby who is premature, and yet this is how she's been treated.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
I appreciate that there is one person in charge of this room and one person who's been essentially very, very callous, but who else was hearing that crying? Would be something I couldn't cope with. I guarantee you that. And I'm sure many of you agree with me. If you heard a child in distress, you'd be going over. And if somebody was saying, hey, I've just strapped them down, face down to this particular beanbag, you'd be like, yeah, I'm just going to unstrap that baby now. If I was passing on the street, you'd have to hold me back, because that's how it affects normal, typical human beings. I appreciate that if you work in the environment, you get desensitized to things a certain amount. But I've worked for 20 years in therapy. I still feel as compassionate and empathic when people come to me with their terrible stories of horrible abuse. I don't sit there going, oh, well, just get over it, because I'm desensitized. That would mean leave. Leave your job. If anything, you cultivate a coping strategy in your work where you can manage distressing situations in a really effective way without it bringing you down too much. You don't get affected by it in the same manner on a psychological level, so you're more effective. What we're seeing with Kate Ruffly is quite the opposite. Clearly, she's somebody who really can't stand the environment, can't stand babies being babies, and seeks to do anything to silence them. They can't rouse this little girl. So now the paramedics rush her, as I said earlier, to Stepping Hill Hospital. It's about 3 miles away from where the actual nursery is. There has been a phone call clearly made to the parents, one to the mother, and then the mother has also called John Meehan, the father in this case, and he's already there. He's already waiting outside A&E, and he has to watch those paramedics performing CPR on his daughter in the back of the ambulance. I don't have a clue how anybody can witness that and not spend the rest of their lives traumatically reliving it. I do not doubt for one minute that John Meehan, who without a shadow of a doubt in his legal training will have heard of pretty awful things, but nothing will compare to that moment. He had to watch that. A child that was dropped off safely by her mummy, a child that was paid by them to be cared for in the care of that nursery, and now they're doing CPR in the back of an ambulance, and it's too late. She's pronounced dead at 4:09 p.m. Now let's talk about Kate Ruffly. I will tell you there is very limited information about who this woman is. She's from Heaton Norris in Stockport. Apparently she started working at Tiny Toes Nursery straight after college at the age of 18, so she was pretty young. You would imagine that after a long period of time, she would at least get moderately okay at her job, but clearly that isn't the case here. Apparently she gained most of her knowledge of working with babies and young children from her colleagues because she was a kid when she started. She had 17 years experience as a nursery worker at the time of the tragedy, and she'd actually risen to the point of becoming deputy manager at Tiny Toes Nursery. So she is schooled, she is educated, She should be trained in safeguarding and she should certainly know how to deal with babies. Also, as somebody who is actually the deputy manager, she has a level of power. So if you can't deal with the babies, go and work with the toddlers. Do something else. Because you're the deputy manager, you'll have a level of power there. But the problem with power is it can work two ways. For example, babies, well, they're a little bit more easy to control, aren't they? Yeah, they make noise, but what can they do? How can they escape you? You know, you can swaddle them real tightly, place them where you want, and they're not going to move. And if you've got that ability to zone out from their distress, well, you can just go on your phone, for example. You can do something else. You can chat to a member of staff. And it's deeply worrying because this is the absolute opposite that our children need. So maybe she was using her power to place herself in a position where she could just quieten those babies the way that she has done in this case and then just crack on without giving herself too much stress. Also, psychologically, what we see is, as opposed to this kind of environment being something that she's grown used to and has formed some kind of professional understanding of how to manage when children are distressed, she's instead turned this into frustration and callousness. So she hasn't graduated at all through her experience here. She's totally gone the opposite route. She's clearly become somebody who gets stressed and annoyed with babies. She shouldn't be in this job whatsoever. She didn't have any children of her own. And I don't know why, but it could be quite telling. Maybe it was that she just couldn't have children. I would understand that would be terribly upsetting. But it could just be that she's realised after working with children for a period of time that she really doesn't want to do that when she goes home as well as when she does it in the day. Now, there wasn't a lot told to the trial about her personal life, but she is believed to have lived with a partner and also their pet dog. And there was a bit of a strange, shall I say, Facebook post just about 5 days before Genevieve died. And this is what it said. Sometimes I feel bad for not calling or checking up on people, but then I realise the phone works both ways and there ain't nobody checking up on me. She added, just gonna leave this here. And I guess you can interpret that lots of ways. First of all, I get it. You know, people don't call you, don't check up on you, then why check up on them? It's dualistic, isn't it? You're meant to share space with people who care for you in an equal measure. If they're not checking on you and calling you to check that you're okay, then why would you do the same for them? Equally, I would say, I don't expect people to check on me unless I'm struggling. If I'm struggling, I'm having a bad time, I want to call off my sister, I want to call some of my friends. But for the most part, if I know that somebody's having a difficult time, even if I haven't seen them for 6 months, I check on them. It's called being a nice person. Obviously, roughly, didn't necessarily get the memo on that. But it's quite an egocentric post. I appreciate it's a message to all those people out there on social media who aren't checking on you. And maybe you're saying, hey, maybe I'm struggling, give me a call. But it's a little bit narcissistic, isn't it? Really? People aren't going to read that and be like, oh, I'm going to have to check in with Kate Ruffley. Or people aren't going to read it and go, I'm so offended. She's trying to have a go at me because I haven't called her. It's more about her just stating her expectations and also excusing her behaviour. Now, a Home Office post-mortem had to be carried out. That was conducted on the 12th of May, 2022. And the autopsy reveals that Genevieve died from a combination of asphyxiation and pathophysiological stress, which was created by a very unsafe sleeping environment. So imagine a baby, first of all, having restricted ability to actually breathe in. So just think about you're not taking in potentially enough oxygen. You've got all of these problems with your actual airway. On top of that, you're getting more and more stressed because of these feelings. You've got this little heart that's trying to beat and get all of the things that are needed to keep that beating happening. And this combination of factors essentially results in death. It's harrowing to me to think that this beautiful little baby who was so loved, so adored, so wanted, so part of the bigger picture of her family life. She was a big spirit in a small form. That's the way I would describe her when I've read about what her parents say. The fact that they have to note that she would have been in absolute distress and all she would have wanted was mummy or daddy. That's all she would have wanted. It is just beyond harrowing. Now, the subsequent report by the pathologist said that there were literally no underlying medical conditions for her death. So there was no cause that explained why she would have died aside from the cause that we know about, which is a horrific treatment at the hands of this woman. It didn't take very long for Kate Ruffley to be arrested. Bear in mind, they've got the CCTV. So 4 days after Genevieve dies, she was arrested on the suspicion of manslaughter. And In her initial interview with the police, she basically said, hey, I checked on Genevieve regularly. Massive liar. Massive liar. You know, I know that when they're doing police interviews, they obviously have to be very respectful. They often have to listen to stories that are just utterly chilling, and they also have to deal with liars on a daily. So I get it. They're schooled, they're prepared, etc. But when they've seen CCTV footage and they know this woman has literally caused the death of this child, it must be absolutely galling when this person just paints this picture of professionality and is just arguing, oh, I checked on her every 5 minutes. It's BS. The police know that and they're listening to her. And basically she's implicating herself, isn't she? Because they've got the CCTV footage. They can absolutely call her out on it, but they want to see her point of view. They want to listen to whether this is somebody who really didn't realise that what she was doing was wrong, or is this somebody that fully understood what she did was wrong and now she's trying to cover her tracks and save her own skin? If you're lying immediately after the thing has played out about your actions, that's because you knew what you did was wrong, and that's because there was a level of intent. I don't think she intended to kill this child. Clearly, she wouldn't want to go to prison. But I do think that she intended to harm this child, but quietly. I just thought she didn't think she was going to get caught. And the minute that she's gone too far with that quiet abuse, well, essentially, she now has a problem because she needs to act as if she was doing what was right in work. So she just cooks up a story saying, I checked on her regularly. But she didn't. And everyone knows she didn't. And she's presented with that CCTV, and it literally shows her ignoring Genevieve. Now, you won't be surprised. After she's like, I did everything right. So what did you do? I checked on the child. I checked on the child regularly. Did you check on the child? I absolutely did. It's part of my job. I go around and I check on children. That's what I'm doing. I checked on the babies. I particularly checked on Genevieve. Are you absolutely 100% sure? Absolutely. That's why I'm here. I'm being open. I'm being authentic. I'm being honest. I'm telling you the truth, and I'm answering your questions without anybody essentially guiding me or advising me not to, because I'm innocent. I have nothing to hide. Unfortunately, we've got the CCTV of you doing exactly the opposite. No comment. Why are you saying no comment? You just said you were being helpful. No comment. And that's what happened. As soon as she's shown the damning evidence, apparently all of those answers dried up, because she's bang to rights. I know that in America you'd refer to it as dead to rights, but what I'm saying is, gotcha. You're not going to be going anywhere, because it's very, very clear that not only did you know you'd done something wrong, and that's why you were covering your tracks, the moment that it's identified that you have to physically see yourself doing those things wrong, suddenly she doesn't want to speak anymore. So she absolutely intended, if she could have, to get away with killing this child. And again, what does that speak to you? Because for me, if I had done something so horrendous and I could acknowledge that me strapping that baby down had led to the death, I would be like, I can't believe this has happened. It's totally my fault. I realise now I've got to be accountable and responsible. I might not want to go to prison, but I would absolutely 100% just have to tell them what I did. Because if you are innocent, if you really didn't have any negative intent, then you're not going to try and hide. Even when you realise something awful's played out, you're not playing with that thought process that you're somebody who's callous. You're just being who you are. You've made a terrible mistake. You take responsibility for it. That's not what Kate Ruffley does. And when it gets to court, and bear in mind, if we go to court and somebody pleads not guilty, it means the family have to sit through every tiny detail. And bear in mind, these are two legal professionals. It's not like they're going to try to avoid listening to every single detail. It's what they do. It's what they breathe. It's how they live. That woman pled not guilty to unlawful act manslaughter and an alternate count of child cruelty. Bear in mind, it's on CCTV, love. It's on CCTV. No, she goes ahead and she actually claimed that Genevieve's death was a terrible and unavoidable accident. Unavoidable accident. That's like me getting a pan and smashing my kid in the head with it and going, oh my God, what an unavoidable accident. If you hadn't been walking past at the moment that I had taken this pan and directed it at your head and smashed it into your head, this wouldn't have happened. It's an unavoidable accident. It's like me driving down the road, seeing, I don't know, shall we say my mum, an old age pensioner crossing, and just thinking, I'm just going to hit her. It was an unavoidable accident. I didn't mean to hit her. I just saw her and then I drove directly at her and I hit her. It was unavoidable. I could have avoided it, but I didn't avoid it because in my head, it's normal to just smash into people and throw them over your bonnet and then claim that at the end of the day, if that person hadn't been crossing the road, I wouldn't have had to try to not avoid them in the way that I tried to not avoid them because it was unavoidable and therefore it's an unavoidable accident. Sorry, that makes no sense. That's right. That's what unavoidable accidents are. Honestly, it's just so distressing to hear somebody talk this level of BS when we're dealing with such a horrific incident. Now, the trial lasted a month, and at this point, that meant the jurors as well were people who had to sit through the footage. So imagine having to literally watch a child die. That's what happened. Jurors heard that Genevieve was left for 90 minutes strapped face down on a beanbag, which was all about making her apparently go to sleep. They also had to see her being found unresponsive and blue. They heard that she died from the asphyxiation, which were caused basically by those stresses I talked about. They were shown that CCTV where she's just left and ignored and she's becoming increasingly more and more distressed. She's seen struggling on it. She's seen coughing on it. This is all while she's swaddled to that bean bag and with a blanket over her head. And it also shows very clearly that Genevieve is being ignored by Ruffley. And apparently, and I can only describe this because I obviously haven't had access to the CCTV footage itself, the actual court, it was noted that Genevieve's crying and desperate last movements were seen by the jury as she was just struggling to breathe. And in fact, that worker, Kate Ruffley, literally only checked on her when she was unresponsive and blue. And they were all apparently in tears. The jurors were absolutely broken by it. All of them were told by the prosecution that Ruffley displayed a lack of sympathy towards children. And the prosecution, again, very much pushed that point that Ruffley had basically taken against Genevieve in the days before her death. They said that Ruffley was repeatedly expressing frustration with Genevieve in the hours and days before her death. And she was doing really awful things. So she's singing, "Genevieve, Genevieve, stop your whinging, Genevieve." On one occasion, she also said, "Genevieve, if we had any chance of being friends, you just blew it." Later adding, "You are driving me bananas." Also in CCTV footage, she could actually be seen picking Genevieve out of a cot and then placing her really impatiently on a playmat, muttering "vile," and 20 minutes, because obviously that's the amount of time that she'd slept and Ruffley wasn't happy with that. Also, this is within an hour of this little girl arriving, Ruffley was heard in this really mocking singing voice saying, oh, Genevieve, go home, Genevieve, go home, Genevieve. And this is as the baby is crying on the playmat. Also on one occasion, apparently after Genevieve rolled onto her side, Ruffley picks her up, says, "Sit up properly, stress head." These are all totally incongruent with care. It's just devastating to think that we're talking about what actually happens to that beautiful little girl on her last day on this earth. Ruffley was also accused of treating Genevieve very roughly before she put her to sleep. It's interesting that she's called Ruffley. It's a great descriptor of the kind of person that she is, isn't it? Sometimes in a name, there is real meaning. She was also accused by the prosecution of having illogical and disturbing hostility towards Genevieve that was obviously demonstrated in all of that CCTV footage. And the prosecutor accused Ruffley of punishing Genevieve for that perceived imposition that the youngster had placed on her time. Very, very powerful. So what that prosecutor is saying is the mindset that Ruffley had was not, "I am here, I am employed, it is my job to protect and care for these children, I am a safeguarder, I'm a professional." It was, "What are you doing causing issues with my day?" That was the mindset. It was a twisted reality of what she should have been dealing with, which is her job to be paid to do the best to protect those children. But that's not how she perceives her role. Her role is to make things easier for herself. And Genevieve, in her mind, was making things more challenging. Also, of course, the prosecution talked to the jury about how Ruffley then lied. She tried to hide what she'd done, and she was saying that she constantly checked on the babies in her care, which was absolute BS. Now, an independent childcare expert actually reviewed the CCTV footage from the nursery, and that professional commented saying that the actual care was uncaring, cruel and unprofessional when it came down to the practice of Ruffley. Not that we need to be told that by a professional, it's very obvious, but nonetheless, a professional was brought in on an expert basis to do that. Also, further sleep information by a safe sleep expert actually determined that Genevieve's death was entirely avoidable. Of course it was. Has she been given the right treatment, the correct treatment, the very, very basic treatment? Genevieve would be alive today in the arms of her family, playing with her big sister, being the beautiful being that she was always meant to be. That goes without saying. I wouldn't be telling this story. I shouldn't be telling this story. It was the very basic expectation of care that the child could have been provided that would have prevented this. We're not talking about somebody going above and beyond. Just making sure that a child can breathe freely. It's all that child needed. And yet here we are, because of the selfish actions of one woman and the failures in care of the standards of the actual nursery. Now, obviously, in this case, there was an opportunity for Ruffley to actually give evidence regarding who she is and what she believes that she did, and she did go ahead and give evidence. Now, when she's questioned about the CCTV, she basically admits to looking impatient. I mean, impatient. If ever we were going to have an underestimation, the word impatient feels it. Impatient, you know, not quite the same level that we're talking about, is it? You know, if impatience led to deaths every single day of the week, there would be a different categorisation of impatient. When I think about impatient, I think, ooh, I'd really like to go to that show I've booked. I'm a bit impatient, quite excited, looking forward to it. Impatient doesn't make me conjure up ideas of killing. But that's what she's saying. Yeah, they've got it on CCTV, her doing activities that are downright dangerous and actually fatal, and yet she just sees it as a bit impatient. And that's interesting, because that brings us to the position of where her perception lies. She is probably viewing that footage and thinking, I've done worse. Okay, I don't look great, but you should have seen me, I don't know, last Wednesday kicking a dog that got in my way. I'm not saying she kicked a dog, by the way. Just throwing it out there before anybody's like, she didn't do that. I know. I'm just saying that's the level that comes into mind when you think about her understanding of impatient. So arguably what we could take from that is that this is something that is normal for her. No big deal. And that's why she's gone not guilty. This is something she's probably done day to day. Yes, she's done it really badly with Genevieve, but it isn't something that provokes her to go, well, I look terrible there. And that, again, is something that the juror's going to be looking at. If you were watching that and going, I can't believe I was like that. It just feels bizarre seeing myself doing it. There would be humanity, a compassion, and empathy. No, not there at all. Now, under cross-examination, when it comes to about the response that she has to being accused of persecuting Genevieve, because that's what basically she's accused of, that she went for that child specifically, Ruffley said, I would never, not like a nine-month-old baby, to say I dislike her is far from the truth. And that might be true, because she may have had absolutely no feelings for Genevieve whatsoever. Genevieve's just a problem that she needs a solution for. She's an issue that she needs to deal with. She probably doesn't even relate to the child. So it may not be that she genuinely had a dislike for her. It's just that she doesn't care full stop, which kind of makes it worse. Because if there was a spectrum of care, maybe some of the babies would have been receiving it, but I don't think that they would have been. I don't think this is just about a personality clash. I think this is just about a professional who is completely abandoning their professional conduct and doesn't care enough for these children at all. She also denied that calling Genevieve a whinger and a diva was malicious. What does that tell you again about the psychology of this woman? It's okay to be abusive. It's okay to be negative to these beautiful beings that she's meant to care for. And she actually said, to validate this, often we'd say things about the children such as stop whinging. It wasn't shouted at the kids. It wasn't said in a malicious way. They were just passing comments through the working day. Now, just think about that mindset. So that's like me coming in, and I used to manage people for many, many years. I had people who I worked with who were under me, essentially. If I had walked in and talked about one of my clients, such as, I can't stand that whinging depressive. What an absolute piece of work they are. I wish they wouldn't come. That would be enough for me to find myself disciplined. And rightly so. I'm in a job where I'm going to care about my clients. If, however, I went into a room therapeutically with a client and then said to them, can't stand you whinging. You really do my head in. At the end of the day, I just wish you'd shut up. In fact, I wish you'd shut up and go home. You would be surprised to imagine that firstly, I would lose my membership to my professional body. And secondly, I would lose my job, and rightly so, because you can't do that. But she can, because what she's saying is, well, the babies, they don't really understand what I'm saying when I'm being abusive, so hey, I'll just say it. That's the mindset, and it's really important that we connect with that, because this shows how desensitized and disconnected she is to the role she was employed for.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus plans November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to care for yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps, ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today for 10% off your first month.
Which is to be a surrogate parent to some degree, a surrogate caregiver without a doubt, in the hours she's paid to protect these children. But apparently it's just normal. If they're not berating and negatively talking about babies in their day-to-day experience, what are they doing? I don't know. Working, maybe? There's some of you actually has a job caring for children. Just throwing it out there. Working, maybe. Maybe just doing your job, maybe. Anybody? Anybody? No? No, you're just all in the staff room slagging babies off. Now, in response to being confronted with her comment, sit up properly, stress head, roughly again said there was no malice in it, it was just a throwaway comment. But it wasn't, was it? Because it's not a throwaway comment when the care absolutely evidences that this was consistent and where a baby died. She then went on to say that she didn't treat Genevieve any differently from any other children, which is terrifying for any parent who sent their child there, because the chances are that's true. Genevieve got it that day, but maybe the next day it would have been a different child, and so on and so forth. Maybe it's not that she had a specific issue with Genevieve, it's just that day she got unlucky in the lottery of negativity that roughly projected onto those children. Roughly also defended the fact that she used the beanbag, she said it was regularly used for babies when the six cots in the room were full. She said that the straps were to stop babies falling off and they weren't tight. She also said that she placed Genevieve to sleep on her side as she wanted to settle a cough that she had, which makes her sound like she's caring, but we all know it's lies. It's lies. She wasn't settling any baby on her side. In fact, to use the word settle, that would mean that you were going over and making sure the child was comfortable, the child was at peace. She doesn't. She allows that child to become more and more and more and more distressed, which absolutely negates her argument. She also said it was not out of character for a baby to be kicking her legs and tossing and turning, and that she had gone ahead and made appropriate checks. Sorry, just like, what about appropriate checks? The appropriate checks. But we've seen all the CCTV, and literally, you don't check. In fact, you are completely devoid of checking. That's why you're here in court. No, I checked. It's just what you'll find out with me is that there are these unavoidable accidents, such as the CCTV only recording the very bad bits about me and avoiding the bits that are really good. So I've been accidentally, but non-accidentally, not recorded because it's avoided recording me in the very important bits where I would have been seen as not being somebody who avoids all the care that I need to give these children and unavoidably would then not be here because I would have avoided being here because I would have done my job. Does that make sense? No, no, it really doesn't make sense. I'm just going to get a book and throw it at you. Anyway, this is what she's saying. This is just normal, even though it isn't normal at all. Now, while she was on the stand, Ruffley was actually asked if she thought that Genevieve's death was avoidable, and she said, I feel that if I checked on her a couple of seconds or minutes earlier, it may have been different. It was a common practice for children to sleep in the beanbag bed. I feel responsible in the fact that Genevieve was in my care that day. However, I don't feel my actions were the reason for the death. Really? I'm just going to put it out there in the whole room. I think only you were thinking that. I actually think your defence was probably shaking the head going, no, to be honest, we agree with the prosecution. It was most definitely your fault. But anyway, apparently it's not her fault. And I really think that if she'd taken more accountability and responsibility and actually been able to admit failures, maybe she would have been seen more humanely. But she isn't, because it's not her fault. And even though this baby is dead, she wasn't the reason. Now, her defence lawyer, who I think had quite a hill to climb, shall we say, when you consider that all of this is on CCTV, he said that Ruffley looked after children in a practical, responsible, no-nonsense, but caring way. Now, I like the way they're trying to frame that. You know, my client might come across as somebody, could be seen as a little bit aggressive, a little bit of uncaringness, a bit discompassionate. She could be seen as that, but I'm saying it's no-nonsense. I think we're going back to like the 60s, aren't we? 50s, maybe the 50s and 60s, you know, back in the good old days where you could take a slipper or, I don't know, a crop to a child and everyone was like, oh, you know, just no nonsense there. It's just a no nonsense thing. I mean, I'm not sure it's no nonsense. I think it's abuse. No, it's no nonsense. It's no nonsense. I mean, he just took a slipper and a belt to the child. I think that's abuse. No, it's no nonsense parenting. It's where the world's gone wrong. So what I'm saying is that Ruffley might come across as a discompassionate, horrible human who literally failed completely in the environment. But if you just change the angle on that and think, well, she's just a bit behind the times. She's just no nonsense. She doesn't like any of that care, compassion, empathy, safeguarding. She likes the good old days where it was perfectly all right to do horrible things to children and no one got into trouble. I rest my case. Thank you, Your Honour. Anyway, apparently that's it. She's responsible, even though she's irresponsible. She's practical, even though it's completely impractical the way that she actually puts the child. She has a no-nonsense attitude, even though literally everything she says is nonsense. And even though we can't respond to what happened as nonsense because we're talking about the death of a child, what we're saying is the idea that it's down to her mindset of just being, I don't know, a little bit more hardcore is And also, to add in that it was done in a caring way, how was it done in a caring way? How did that defence barrister allow that to trip from their lips? Yeah, this baby died, but she was killed in a caring way. Reframe it, recalibrate what's being said. And I can't imagine how offending that would be to this beautiful baby's parents. That same barrister denied that Ruffley had failed to make safe sleep arrangements and said that she'd kept an appropriate eye on Genevieve. The defence really went for the juggler with the staffing at the nursery. I think that's a fair criticism, absolutely. And her barrister actually reminded the jury that senior managers in the nursery had a live CCTV feed of the baby room where Genevieve was fighting for her life. I would absolutely agree with that. I don't think that Ruffley is the only person responsible. I think she is fully responsible for the death of Genevieve, but I think that the nursery themselves are culpable for the lack of care and provision for babies and children who deserved so much more. There is no doubt whatsoever. But the ball really lands with Ruffley. It really does, because she heard the distress. She chose to strap the baby down. And also, she's deputy manager, so she has power. A lot of the other individuals in there may think that they needed to bow to her word because that's her job. So it's a difficult scenario to imagine somebody who's of a lower rank challenging her. So that could be also why it contributes to this child being in a situation where she loses her life, because this woman has a level of power. And even though the CCTV feed is there and people can look at it, chances are people trusted her. So they're not thinking what's going on in that room. However, anybody in earshot of a baby in distress for a long period of time, I do think they are culpable as well. On a lesser degree, but they're culpable as well. I roughly told the court that the ratio of staff to children at the nursery had gradually worsened during a time at Tiny Toes. So in April and May of 2022, the staff to children ratios were at the times 1 to 9, 2 to 11, 2 to 13, and 1 to 16. So at times, you had one adult with 16 children, which is harrowing. And also roughly was only paid £11 to £11.50 an hour. It's a very low pay when you consider the actual importance of the role and also the shed load of money that parents pay to nurseries. It's insane. You're talking about a full-time wage being paid over to a nursery. That's how expensive it is. Her defence lawyers basically also brought up the fact that the owners of the nursery are making a load of money from the business and yet paying this minimum wage. When the prosecution did their closing speech, he said that Ruffley had brought about the child's death with deliberate conduct. He said that Genevieve was punished for her earlier perceived misdemeanours, for not sleeping long enough for her liking, and that she was being banished to the beanbag and restrained. It was a recipe for disaster, and disaster there followed. Very powerful, and I think absolutely accurate with respect. On the 20th of May 2024, after 5 hours and 46 minutes of deliberations, the jury returned the verdict. And we all know when it's a fast turnaround, that jury is sure. The trial had taken place at Manchester Crown Court, and indeed, that's where the verdict was read. 37-year-old Kate Ruffley was unanimously found guilty of unlawful act manslaughter. Ruffley showed no emotion. She just stared straight ahead. And Ruffley's mother was heard to say, "She's not a monster, and I get it." I would appreciate that Ruffley's mother is a victim in this too. It's hard to believe that your child is capable of such callous killing, but that's what happened. She callously killed this child. She may not have wished to, but she did things that brought that to a position of reality. And she did it knowing that baby was distressed for 1 hour, 37 minutes. So she may not be a monster, but she's callous as hell. Genevieve's mother apparently held back tears in the public gallery, thus showing, shall we say, a great deal more emotion than the baby that she had once birthed, who had grown into somebody who took another's baby from them. And like I said, I appreciate that when you are a family of an individual that goes to prison for a horrendous crime, you see the best in them still, even when the evidence tells a different story. During Ruffley's sentencing hearing, I mean, heartbreaking victim impact statements were read. They were really upsetting. They were all read by Genevieve's family, and they have been devastated. Prosecutor Martin Keed KC actually read the statement on behalf of Gigi's mother, Katie, who has had her heart broken into a million smithereens. In that, she said, she feels dead inside. Just let that sink in, guys. This loving mother, she feels dead inside. She said that words are simply inadequate to express the loss that the family felt. She said that she now only lives for her two other daughters. Nothing can reflect the horror of her death and the life I now live. I lived that day in complete ignorance of what was happening to Genevieve. I feel so ashamed and such a failure because I was living in complete ignorance of what was to come. I lost who I'd been. I became the person I am now. Dead inside, incapable of living. I struggle to understand how this could happen to my little girl. That is just devastating. And the fact that she's got other children is no recompense for what's happened in her life. In fact, to be a loving mother and to lose a child, you then have to bring somehow the energy and the love to your other children, even though you feel like you've been executed emotionally. I have no doubt whatsoever. She struggles moment to moment, breath to breath. Also, Gigi's six-year-old sister, they did a victim impact statement as well. Apparently, she was said to have had an inseparable bond with Gigi. She said, "Every day, I get punched with sadness. What this lady has done is terrible and something nobody should experience. My younger sister should have the experience of having two older sisters, and I should have a younger sister. This has changed my life forever." Gigi's daddy, John Meehan, who's 38 at the time of this, he said to Kate Ruffley, who was staring downwards in the dock. For you, there will be no redemption and no legacy. You will never be anything but a child killer. But Genevieve's name will live on. Very powerful. And I understand what he's saying. You're going to spend your life now in prison. And my baby, even though she's not present on this planet, we're going to think about her every day for the right reasons, not for the wrong reasons. The judge told Ruffley in his summing up, by your callous act, you have deprived Genevieve of the future she should have had. Her death was absolutely avoidable, the results of your unlawful actions on that day. As the harrowing CCTV audio and video footage showed, that day you left Genevieve in that position, only carrying the most cursory and infrequent of checks. I am certain that every person in this courtroom who watched that footage was willing you to pick her up and to remove her from the danger you placed her in, knowing, of course, that you didn't. It was apparent that at best, you considered Genevieve to be a nuisance and at times displayed antipathy and frustration with her. Your interactions with Genevieve on the 6th of May and the 9th of May palpably lacked any care, kindness, or concern for her well-being. Even as Genevieve's crying intensified, you didn't approach her. You didn't pick her up. You didn't show her any concern. You left her to die. That description just sends chills through me. Because we're talking about what actually happened to a defenceless, beautiful, 9-month-old baby. On the 22nd of May 2024, Kate Ruffley was sentenced to 14 years imprisonment. The judge said that a life sentence was not appropriate, as she deemed Ruffley did not pose a further risk to the public. I guess that's fair enough. This person has not had a criminal record prior to this. They haven't acted in a way that suggests that she's got murderous intent. And therefore, after she's rehabilitated, reformed and served a sentence, there is a strong likelihood she will carry on in a non-criminal way for the rest of her life. But nonetheless, it is a strong sentence. And that's because what she did to that little girl was torturous. When she was given that sentence, she just stared straight ahead. She was emotionless as she left the dock. In a statement outside court, Genevieve's parents said that they had been devastated by Genevieve's loss and that they would never forgive Ruffley. Genevieve's daddy, John Meehan, said, "We will never forgive the callousness."
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Kate Ruffley's actions. She was entrusted with the care of our daughter, but instead she treated her with contempt. The couple went on to pay tribute to their amazing child. They said she loved life, to play the tambourine, to spend time with a big sister. She was kind, she was infectious, she was mischievous, she was fascinated with the world and everything in it. She embraced every day. She loved life. And we loved her instantly. We loved every day watching her develop. We'll never accept the cruelty of a life being taken away. He said that we will not get to hear her speak her first words. Her watch her grow up is impossible to comprehend. Genevieve could have done anything she wanted. She had a whole life to live and was loved so dearly by her family. We grieve for what we do not have. Words cannot adequately convey how much we miss Genevieve. We are so desperate for her to be in our arms as she should be, to watch her put on her school uniform in September when she would have started preschool. Instead, we are here in a place we could never have imagined. When we took her to nursery that day on the 9th of May, where she was meant to be safe and cared for. The pain of her loss is beyond any measure. Her life was full of promise and wonder and it was taken. We thank the police for their dedication to getting justice for Genevieve, for their professionalism and their compassion. We would not be here without their commitment or the work of the Crown Prosecution Service and the legal team who have fought for Genevieve and our family. Our beautiful daughter deserves to be remembered for the wonderful person she is, not the nature of her death. She deserves to have a legacy so that her life can inspire others. As a family, we will work tirelessly to ensure she has the legacy she deserves. I'm sure a lot of you are both devastated and inspired by those words. I don't know how he was able to create that statement, which is both absolutely devastating and full of hopeful potential that I have no doubt as a couple, her parents will work hard to create. I do believe that we will hear more of Genevieve's legacy and name because she has such intrinsic meaning to her family, but also it sounds as if they are turning their grief into a fire that can set alight something positive in her name. Now, Tiny Toes Nursery, you will be relieved to know, was suspended by Ofsted, the regulator, the day after the little girl's death. 4 months later, an inspection found it had failed to meet its legal requirements, and soon after, the nursery's owners, Frank and Karen Pelle, relinquished their licence, which is important because we don't want children being put in places where there's a lot of dollar made and no care given. Megan Goldsby, who actually worked in the toddler room, said the setting was very badly run. She said we had too many children, and she actually told the trial that the national staffing ratios weren't followed and actually didn't reflect reality because the national guidelines state that there must be at least one member of staff for every 3 children aged under 2 in nurseries in England. But at Tiny Toes, the ratios far exceeded those levels. And as I said earlier, those statistics were terrifying when in one case you had one member of staff to 16 children. Stockport Council is also carrying out a separate investigation into the health and safety at Tiny Toes, which the local authority is obliged to undertake because clearly there's been a death in childcare in their area. There are also questions that are being discussed about whether regulations should be tightened to explicitly ban the use of bean bags as sleep aids. I think so. A baby died. Yes, she died in a callous way and that worker contributed hugely to it, but ban them. They're apparently widely available online, even though they've been declared unsafe by the Lullaby Trust, which is a charity that promotes self-sleeping. Strapping a swallowed child to any item, in fact, appears to be a blatant breach of the government's guidance for early years sleeping arrangements, although there isn't an actual explicit ban on beanbags. But you can just hear from that, those failures were enormous. And it's good that the nursery have closed down because they failed horribly. And a baby died and a family has been destroyed, at least at this moment in time. I'm sure that the family will find their wings and learn to fly again, so to speak, but it must just be hard living with what they've been through. Now, one of the detectives spoke after the sentencing, and that was Charlotte Worley, and she said, due to Kate Ruffley's lack of remorse and refusal to take accountability for her actions, Genevieve's family have been forced to relive the worst day of their life repeatedly, having made their most painful memories made public. And that's so powerful. The fact that she went not guilty, that she didn't stand there and say, I am wrong, I am guilty. And that detective is right. Because of her refusal to take responsibility to say I'm guilty, this is all public domain, and those family members had to sit and listen to the excruciating and devastating reality of what that beautiful little girl had to suffer. The reason I'm telling this story is because I am so moved that this family have endured such a horrific and completely avoidable reality in their life and now have to somehow pick up the pieces. It's just devastating, and I speak of that in the safe knowledge that my child, my own baby of 10 months, is lovingly in the arms of her father in another room, protected from all of this. I have the privilege of knowing that. And Genevieve's family sadly no longer do. I wish them every ounce of strength that is required to heal, never fully, never fully, but enough to do what they're intending, which is to make sure that Genevieve's name and legacy has impact, maybe changes the world for the better. I wish them every second of luck with that, and I'm sure that all of you do too. As ever, guys, this is a really sad one. It's one that you probably won't have heard of because it's local to me, and I needed Genevieve to be known. I hope you cradle her memory really, really closely in your minds and hearts. Take care.
Hi there, my name is Annie Elise, aka your true crime BFF and host of the podcast Serialously. I have been a true crime enthusiast forever, but I wished somebody would break down the cases for me like a friend, giving all the details and discussing every twist and turn. So I decided to create a podcast that does just that. Serialously with Annie Elise is topping the charts with over 1 million weekly downloads. I do the deep dives in these cases so you don't have to, diving into all the raw details, saying what we're all thinking, and in a conversational way, just like having a conversation with your best friend. So join me and let's talk all things true crime. Serialously with Annie Elise. New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday wherever you get your podcasts.